Now stay tuned for To Your Health on WPVC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here's your host, MC Blair.
Good morning. Good morning. Are we live? Awesome. All right. This is MC Blair. And I like to start off the show by saying that I'm not some slick showman, just here to entertain you. But, and I do hope you enjoy listening to, here on To Your Health. I'm just a guy with a passion and desire for a food system not controlled by profit-only corporations. I research everything from local food and wine to healthy practices like yoga and meditation. Then I'll have the experts come on and confirm and expand on that research. This morning, we have B. Arndt from Speedy B's Energy Bars. Good morning, B.
Good morning.
Hey,
thanks
good.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. And we actually, we start off a little bit with some headlines. And I'm looking for the sound bite, you know. Bitty, 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 bitty. For the headlines.
I'm not going to do it. I'm sorry.
Good. And the first one is a proposed bill could advance food sovereignty. And this is actually in Maine. It's something that we have hopefully championed here. It's some one of my battle cries is food sovereignty, stay within the community. Now this state senator sponsored a bill to legitimize the authority of towns and communities to enact ordinances regulating local food and water distribution free from the state regulatory control. Senator Troy Jackson, an advocate of food sovereignty, wants local food producers to be exempt from state licensing and inspections governing the selling of food as long as the transactions are between the producers and the customers. And that's for home consumption or when the food is sold and consumed at community events such as church suppers. Said he was on the Agricultural Committee 13 and 14, heard a lot of people saying they supported the right to buy food face-to-face without the state stepping in to regulate things. Says he felt that this was important to small producers. 18 towns and 7 counties in Maine have already declared food sovereignty. It's pretty neat. They said they recognize the inherent right of local municipalities to design their own food systems. He said, I know this can be an uphill battle. It could be a long shot because the state seems to want to stop that type of commerce between people. There was last year a similar bill was defeated by one vote. This is a brand new session, so it's early. But I feel hopeful there is growing recognition of the importance of local food control over the local food and water supplies. That sounds pretty good. It's something that we need to do here, I've always said, especially under this new administration where they rolled back the regulation that coal companies can dump into streams now. And, of course, that'll flow down into a river and so on and so forth. Whereas if a community insulates themselves and takes control of that, I think we would be better off from a food standpoint, don't you?
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah.
Keeping it together, keeping it part of the community is really important.
It is important.
It's important to our health.
Yeah. Well, it is, you know, and that's what my two-minute drill is at the end. is about how, you know, we can reduce obesity and type 2 diabetes. Very important. Now, let's see. The next one is Vertical Farm wants to pioneer post-organic food. This is all farmers used to practice organic farming, although they didn't call it organic, right? They just grew everything without chemical fertilizers, pesticides, or herbicides because they didn't have any. They didn't exist. They protected the plants with snails, worms, ladybugs, and homeopathic concoctions passed down from their ancestors. Now, most states have regulations and long lists that define organic and large-scale operation, and while today's organic farmers avoid the use of sprays like and thiamethoxam, both linked to declining bee populations. And, you know, I know that quite a while back, Einstein said that if the bees go, we're
we're about 4 years behind.
That's all right. We had a technical difficulty there. We're back. As I said, if the bees go, we are 4 years behind. So it's incredibly important to not use these chemicals. So Irving Fain's concept of farming does away with the swaths of green space we normally associate with wholesome agriculture. He traded acreage for an urban warehouse, a carefully managed environment, and a proprietary technology that produces food 100 times faster than conventional farming, and all of that without pesticides or soil stimulants or other additives. That's what they claim. They also use 95% less water, which... obviously, water is going to be and is a valuable commodity, but a lot of people are saying that's going to be the next wars are going to be over water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You already start seeing that now. I mean, even think about California.
Oh, yeah.
They had in terms of food and gardening. So.
Yeah. I know. It's crazy. He said he's self-automated technology responds to and manipulates environmental factors upon which plants rely. So, we had a guy on here, Alexander Olson, a couple weeks ago. He had a proprietary system on a small single-family scale. And unlike most full-scale indoor farming operations, his system can sense when it's time to pluck the crops, something that is usually done by sight and schedule in conventional farms. This means less wasted product, more predictable harvesting seasons. It also means more predictable bottom line, which, of course, is very important when you're trying to make a living at this, you know. And I know you guys are doing okay, but I think you mentioned earlier that you had to go big or go home, right?
And that's pretty much how it is. I think a lot of local food vendors, especially in Charlottesville, can say the same, that the margins are so small for food and for local food that we need to really work on the economies of scale.
That's true. I was in the catering business, also had a barbecue sauce, and I would use local pastured pork. And when I did that, I was going to sell them at, you know, across the counter. Mm-hmm. And so I opened it up, but I have found out that I would have to charge about $12.50 a sandwich for a barbecue sandwich. And then, you know, not too many people are willing to pay for that unless they, I mean, if they really know what they're getting, they will. But most people, probably $8, $8.50, $8.95 is probably the top of that price point. And I couldn't have made any money because the obviously local pastured pork is more expensive, and so that's, you know, that's what I found. But anyway, he said without increasing concerns about drought and climate change, vertical farms can operate in limited space with less water and virtually no natural sun. Well, I wonder about that. If natural sun.
Oh my God. Yeah, we're having technical difficulties. We're moving all around here. There we go. Hey, no problem. We'll get it out there. And I need to do more research on the
natural,
whether the products or produce is still good without natural sun.
You know anything about that?
Oh, I can't really speak to that, unfortunately. But I do know, I mean, there are farms out, aquaponics, and interior greenhouses where they are not using natural sunlight. Mm-hmm. And we're still getting food products out of it, and they seemingly taste good, mm-hmm. but I can't speak to the nutritional value.
Yeah, we'll probably have to do a nutritional profile down at Virginia Tech. They have a pretty good.
They've got a great food science department down there.
They do.
Phenomenal. But yeah, I'm not a dietitian, nor do I play one on TV or the radio, as the case may be today. So can't speak to that.
But. Well, they said if the concept becomes more widespread or not, it remains to be seen. But there is something to be said for an industry that uses 95% less water and won't wither in a drought.
Yeah, that is key. I mean, we do have to be aware of the resources that we are straining and, mm-hmm. and what do we need to do as producers, as consumers, to make sure that we ensure the longevity of it, not just for ourselves, but of course for our future and the entire community.
Yeah, so. Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct, B. I'll tell you, are you familiar with biodynamics?
A little bit.
Well, that was my next headlines of biodynamics, the next trend. Uh-huh. Rudolf Steiner, mm-hmm. in his lectures in the 20s, and he basically said that it's about a holistic approach to agriculture, from the soil, obviously, to the plants, and then to the powers of the cosmos. Now, whether or not you believe in that stuff, there is one thing that is as far as powers of the cosmos, and that's, of course, the moon and the tides, and mm-hmm. that definitely has an effect on growing things. As far as the spiritual aspect goes, I firmly believe that if you are spiritually in tune with whatever you're doing, the end product will be better, and there'll be more satisfaction gleaned from that, at least from a personal standpoint.
Well, sure. If you're positive, optimistic, and enjoy what you do, that's going to ensure the longevity. You're going to be more vested in it. Yeah, why wouldn't it be?
Yeah, exactly. So there is something to it. But he also said that to be totally biodynamic, you have to take your cow manure, you have to pack it into a cow's horn, bury it over the winter, diluting a small amount into 34 liters of water. This is dynamitizing it by stirring it by hand in alternate directions for an hour. Macbeth, you know, I have a frog or whatever.
Toil, boil.
The three
witches.
Yeah, 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 exactly. You know, the what do they call it? Twisted Sisters. and then spraying it over the vineyard. They say the most effective argument for biodynamics is that, say, wines produced by employing it are more evocative of the place they're grown and consequently better. And they found that to be true, you know, that I guess the terroir, as they call it in wine production, you know, really comes into the nose and the palate and all that. You know, so that I think that the biodynamically grown agriculture in general is certainly more healthy, and everything that's biodynamic is also organic. They say that biodynamic goes one step beyond organic, because with biodynamics there are no pesticides of any kind, whereas in organic there are some approved pesticides, like one that I know of is derived from geraniums, mm-hmm. and so that's, you know, that's approved, mm-hmm. but it's still a pesticide, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas in biodynamics, you're using things, as I said, like snails and worms and ladybugs to mm-hmm. limit the pests. So, mm-hmm. but anyway, that's that. Now I wanted to ask you.
Uh-oh.
First off, tell our audience about. You and your husband and, you know, your background and then how this all came together.
We moved down to Charlottesville, I guess, in 2012. We were kind of sick of the rat race up in D.C. and decided we wanted to just move back to a local community that we loved. I got my grad school degree here at UVA in Wahoo. And so we decided this was the place that we were really happy with. So we came down here. Neither one of us had a job. Figured, hey, let's figure this out. I am an archaeologist by profession, so I was working. I was working at Monticello at the time, and a friend. Yeah, I love to bake, and especially around Christmas time, I bake a crazy amount of Christmas cookies. Nothing that my not. can't compare to what my mom used to do. I mean, it was kind of ridiculous. But so, I would give them out as gifts. And some friends said, hey, these are really good. You should think about marketing them. And so did a little bit of research. And at the time, a friend of mine and I were training, I think for... I forget what race, and I had hopes to get back into triathlons. I was a amateur triathlete before grad school started, so I was hoping to try to get back into race shape. And she said, "Hey, you know, there aren't any. You're a good baker. There aren't any local Charlottesville-based energy bars. Why don't you try to make something up?" And I thought, okay. So she sent me a recipe that she had found or her mother had made or something, and I tried it, and I didn't like it. And so I redid the whole thing, and you know, I gave some tests. Taste tests around and tried to see what was good, what was not. And what I also learned during this process was that I have an allergy to soy.
Oh.
And so the majority of bars on the market have some kind of soy them. And it's what I've since found, it's I can do organic soy. I can't do manufacturing process. So there's something going on with how they do it, but that's neither here nor there. And so I was trying to find something that wasn't, that I enjoyed eating. And part of it, too, was convincing my husband he needs to eat fruits and nuts, and these things are good for you, and you should enjoy them. He was very reluctant to all this. So there was an idea of trying to get a local bar, trying to convince my husband he needs to eat healthy, and then just doing it because I loved it. And so I came up with the first flavor was the chocolate peanut butter. Surprise, surprise. And I knew I had something when I gave it to my husband, and he told me, okay, I don't like... dates. I don't like raisins. I don't like coconut. So it's got to be good. And I put all those things in it, and he ate it, and he just kind of consumed it. And so I passed it around to some friends, got some positive responses to it. And so we tried, and we took it over to a Ragged Mountain running shop to get feedback from real life, you know, folks that work in the industry.
Sure.
And I'll never forget, we were on vacation, and I had applied for a job, and I got a phone call and found out that I did not get the job, hung up the phone, and the very next call was Ragged Mountain folks, and they said, "We love your bars. When can we have them?" And I thought, wow, that's serendipitous.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get one job, get another. And so at that point, all we had were just kind of the bars, and I said, okay, well, I need a couple months. We didn't have a label. We didn't have a name. We just had been playing around with flavors. And so within a couple months, this was back in 2013, couple months, we had the whole Speedy Bee name, logo, catchphrase, nutritional information, all of that. And it was I don't have a business degree. I don't have, as I said, I'm not, you know, a food nutritionist or anything. But I was a college athlete. Amateur triathlon, I knew what made my body feel good when I ate and what helped me through kind of long workouts. And so I had some, and I did personal research, going to sports journals, going to nutritional journals, trying to find what is the best thing. And so concocted this recipe, really trying to optimize a carbohydrates to protein ratio, because you really want to optimize those two things for the best pre-workout and post-workout recovery. And so then there we are. And so 3 years later, here we are.
Here we are. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
We're listening to WPVC, To Your Health, on PVC 94.7, Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're going to take a break. And we're talking to B. Arndt from Speedy Bee's Energy Bars. Back after this. Hey, we're back. This is MC Blair, To Your Health, 94.7, Resistance Radio, WPVC. Progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're talking to B. Arndt from Speedy Bee's Energy Bars. And she was just kind of winding down a little bit and talking about the nutritional, finding a product that can be portable and fully nutritional. It started off just with athletes in mind, and of course it's now gotten into the mainstream. So
yep.
Please continue.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole point was I wanted it to taste good, mm-hmm. and I wanted it to be an energy bar. People didn't feel like they had to work to eat, and it was something they could enjoy. And what we found was that not only were people enjoying it, but people were coming to me and saying, hey, actually, I eat one of these for breakfast, and it holds me over.
Right.
And so it was accidental. As I mentioned earlier, I had done some research on kind of appropriate balances between carbohydrates and food products and what that. But one of the things we were really focused on was keeping it local. So sourcing local foods as much as possible. The
very
honey.
Very important. Very important.
Well, because it keeps, right, it's an economic stimulus.
It is. It keeps the money here.
It keeps the money here, and that's really important, especially for so many of the great farmers and producers that we have in Charlottesville. We are so lucky, and surrounding areas, to have such a great variety. So the honey that we use to sweeten the chocolate, peanut butter, the almond, cherry is Hungry Hill honey. Mm-hmm. That stuff is just, in my opinion, the best in the world. Mm-hmm. I cannot find a honey that's better flavor. We do the peanuts, or Virginia peanuts from Virginia Diner. And then the apples in our apple cinnamon flavor are from a company called Fruit Cycle, which is based up in D.C. Mm-hmm. And they take apple seconds from local producers in Maryland and Virginia and then dry them, and then we use those apples. So it's not only are we kind of helping local producers, but we're helping local producers with products, in the case of the apples, that they wouldn't be able to sell on the market normally. So that's the goal. And then we tried to extend it further by working with K-Tech, the mm-hmm. Charlottesville... they are the local... why am I drawing a blank on the school... They vocational school.
Oh,
there you
right.
go.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm a new mom. I have a 5-month at home, so I have mommy brain big time. Sorry about that. Anyhow, love to K-Tech. Lots of love to K-Tech. So we reached out to them to work with local students to provide opportunities for working in a business and what that would look like, and had some incredible students who became our bakers and worked with them, and that extended into, I think I had about 3 or 4 bakers who then went on to culinary school and are very, very successful. So that's really kind of...
Yeah, and I was. It's
the
great,
mission.
And well, it is, and that's what we have been stressing here mm-hmm. Since we started, which is when you have a product or products that are produced locally, and you're in business, it provides not only money, stimulus of the money staying within the community, but it also provides jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You are a job creator.
I was a job creator.
a real job creator. Not, anyway, I won't get into that.
Well, the best job creator there ever
absolutely
was.
Absolutely is. Well, yeah, darn right, And then, as you say, they worked with you, and then now they're going to culinary schools and will probably continue. And my bet is you're going to see at least one come back. Mm-hmm. To you, and mm-hmm. after the culinary degree, mm-hmm. of course, by that time, you guys are going to be so wildly successful.
Oh, yeah. That's right. After this radio show, we're going to blow up.
Well, I actually meant the next 2 years. I think culinary school's about 2 years. I know CIA is up in New York, and I think most of them are. I've known a few people from Johnson Wales uh-huh. and also from CIA. But you're using the local honey and the local apples. You know, that's kind of cool that Apple Company takes the seconds that mm-hmm. don't normally sell. We had Jeanette Abbey Nader on here from mm-hmm. City Schoolyard Gardens.
Yep.
And you know her. Oh,
well,
you
know I know of her.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she was talking about a program that they would take the, the fruit that was fruit and veggies that weren't pretty enough to sell in the grocery store, mm-hmm. and of course still perfectly good, and mm-hmm. and then they would take that and distribute that mm-hmm. to folks, and there's a gal over in England that I was reading about, mm-hmm. and she would do the same. She would take all these ugly fruits, if you will, that were still great nutritionally, and turn them into hummus.
Oh.
Yeah, all these different flavors of hummus, which is a great idea. I think that could happen here. You know, we do have a local hummus. I can't recall what it is. But we also have New Moon Naturals, Farmstead Ferments, and they take local cabbages and others and make kimchi and sauerkraut and all that, and they're really great.
Mm-hmm.
So we got it going on here in town. It's just absolutely wonderful. It really is.
Yeah.
I was doing some reading. I found out that the energy bars kind of started with the space program, right? So many things do. And they were like eating
NASA
a tree.
Astronauts.
Chewing on tree bark or something.
Yeah, pretty much.
They call them, energy space food sticks. That's what it was.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they were made by Pillsbury.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. So then I say, I wonder how much added sugar was in that bar.
Or whatever process.
Or whatever it was. Yeah.
Nothing against
Pillsbury, personally, but that's just how big companies operate. But it was nutritionally balanced. They didn't just willy-nilly, turn them out and because it was for the space program.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned one of the first bars that went kind of mainstream. Was that
the Cliff Bar? Cliff Bar is probably one of the best known bars, and you see it everywhere. All the grocery stores, and I believe it started off as two guys out in California who just wanted something different, and I recall reading or hearing about their tales, and they started, I think, with like calzones or something.
Oh, really?
And weren't making any money and came across this, and so they grew it, and they were at a time, I don't know the whole timeline. It was maybe probably like 90s or something when there really wasn't anything else out there. Mm-hmm. I think the only other thing at the time was Power Bar.
Right. I remember those.
And those, whoo! Those were tough to get down.
They were.
I remember trying to eat those and trying to swallow them. Ooh. And then if you didn't drink water, you were... you're going to be a little constipated.
Oh, wow.
For a few days. So, there was this kind of funny little balance. So, but oof. And the flavors were misleading. It was like chocolate peanut butter or straight peanut butter or, gosh, I don't remember all of the flavors. But they all tasted the same and had some weird, like, little.
Oh, my.
In my opinion, had a weird aftertaste or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So Cliff Bar came out as this kind of alternative to they knocked it out of the park. And I think really kind of changed the game, and so now I think, gosh, I read recently there's over 1,000 different energy bars out on the market, so it's a pretty saturated market. And I think, for me personally, it was about being local. It was about being about tasting good and something that people are willing to kind of come back to, and not just necessarily just buy and throw away, but actually think about what they're purchasing.
Yeah,
so.
That was actually going to be my next question. You're listening to Your Health on 94.7 WPBC Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're talking to B. Arndt of Speedy B's Energy Bars. And I want to ask you, how do you wade through the maze of energy bars, the plethora of energy bars, to find the most nutritional and less harmful brand, or least harmful brand?
For me, it's purely taste, that's what leads me to it. That's how I find my love. And then I think we have to be more, as consumers, more responsible on reading labels, and really making sure that what's in there is good for us and good for our bodies, whatever we're seeking to do, whether it's just take a snack or using it as a workout. So, and I found there are some really great bars on the market that I do enjoy. I can commend myself that I've been doing this for over 3 years, and I still enjoy my bars. So clearly,
that's
I have
great.
Yeah, they are the only. Well, sometimes other bars make it into our house, so my husband does get in a little bit of trouble when that happens.
Right.
But I enjoy them, and I just switch through them when I get tired of one flavor. I switch to another one and come back around. So
how did you come up with the name?
So my full name is Beatrix Arndt, and I married a guy named Sam Speedy.
Sam Speedy.
Yep. And I did not take his name, otherwise I'd be Speedy.
Right.
And if I hyphenated, I'd be Arndt Speedy, so that's even more ridiculous.
Yeah.
Make for a great license plate, which actually I do have. And it was actually his mom who said, Speedy Bees. Like, that's the whole point of you want to be a Speedy Bee, right?
Your mother knows knows best, right?
Mother knows best. Yeah. So we came up with Speedy Bees, and he came up with the tagline: "Keep the pace, love the taste." And
oh, right.
Yeah. So it was just you know, kind of a family fun event, sitting around at the beach, sitting around the table talking about these things, and it's just kind of this fun little game.
Well, where can people find your products?
We are in a number of stores. We're at Whole Foods, ACAC Downtown carries us, Rebecca's, Keevil and Keevil in Belmont. We are, if you're in Richmond, Carytown Bikes is, we're really proud to be sponsoring their team. And then we're also in D.C. at Glenn's Market, both Glenn's Market and the DuPont, and then the other market. We've been at Boar's Head. I think I need to replenish over at Boar's Head.
Right, right.
If you're listening, Brett, I'll be there soon. And then we're also at the Omni in Homestead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if you're heading out into the mountains, we really were trying to kind of find active places where active and healthy consumers were going to be interested in kind of purchasing.
Well, I know you've got
products,
the sticker here, Virginia's Finest. Have you approached the people at the Virginia shop? At Barracks Road?
No, actually, we haven't. I'm going to be totally honest with you. In terms of when we first started, we were going out everywhere and trying to get people on. And then full-time job, plus we just had a kid, and now we're trying to keep these bars alive. We've been juggling a lot. So
I imagine.
I'd love to have them in the Virginia store. There's a number of other places that we've talked to and are approaching and talking to. So.
Oh, man, that is great. Yeah. And by the way, folks, I did try the chocolate peanut butter. My producer did as well, Ben Chambers, and he loves it, and I love it. And I am now doing the maple walnut bar, and it's really good. I've eaten energy bars before, and it just seems like they're dry and hard to eat without drinking a lot of water. These are not that way.
Yeah.
They are not that way. They're worth what they are. They're also larger than most of the bars out there that I've researched. Most of them are around 1.6, 1.8 ounces. Mm-hmm. These are 2.2. And as, I'll let you talk about that, B. How did you envision a customer, say they're going to work out and they're going to, eat before you're supposed to eat before you work out anyway. Mm-hmm. So how does that work?
The idea was that the bars were big enough so that it's a two-serving bar. So you eat half of it before, you know your body. So whether it's an hour before or longer. But so you eat that right before and it'll give you that good energy spike with the sugars. But then we also have the right protein amount so that it'll keep you sustained through your workout. And then you eat the other half afterwards and it'll help with recovery. And then, help you not, I used to do this, hit the bag of chips when you got home, So, because you need that salt and replenish the electrolyte. So it was a healthy alternative to that. And I put them in resealable bags personally because when I used to go out on long rides and I'd stick the energy bars in my back pocket of my shirt, I would always end up getting fuzz on it, and that was just not fun when you already have a dry mouth from trying to climb Afton Mountain or something like that, and you stick an energy bar in your mouth and it's got fuzz on it. So that was the whole point of it, so that you could eat half of it, keep it in the pouch, and it'll still be fresh for you when you come back to it a little bit later on.
That is great.
Yeah,
I would have said that was smart. So it's really two servings. Wow.
And we're trying to, I like to say we're trying to, and I hate this word is overused now, but disrupt the energy bar market, which is try to be different from every other energy bar on the market, both in the packaging, the flavor.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. I'm trying to just trying to do something a little different, get people to think about it a little bit differently. Our bars stand up in their packaging.
They do. That's really cool. I love the packaging. They're little pouches, and they've got the little rigid bottom so they can actually stand up on the shelf, which is pretty cool and unique.
Thanks. That's what we're going for.
Well, good. That's very important. Just sort of go away a little bit from your product. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the local community taking charge of their food sovereignty, if you will?
we should do it.
Yeah, we should do it.
We should do it more often. Yeah, we should do it every day. I think, you know, as much as we can, personally, my husband and I really try as much as we can to support our local farmers, support our local stores, and support our local products, as we've already mentioned, because it stays inside. It stays in the family, so to speak. We're only supporting ourselves. And I just, there's something about, you know, the taste of fresh food. We've all had it. When you pick it right off the vine, or you pick it right off the tree, that flavor, it just pops.
And true.
And so if you keep it local, that flavor intensity stays, right? If you think about it, most of the food that we are consuming from a variety of grocery stores is coming from California.
Right.
So you think about it, it gets picked off the vine or pulled. And then instantly, vegetables, fruits, all of that start losing their nutritional value and their taste. So now you're losing it the second it's out of the ground. It goes into one truck, two trucks, three trucks, who knows how many, before it makes it onto the grocery store, you know, a day or less, before it makes it to the shelf, before you buy it. I mean, suddenly we're talking about a week, maybe even 2 weeks.
Sure.
If you think about it, if you look at where some of the fruit's coming from, you know, we just purchased some blueberries and they came from Chile.
Right.
How long did that take?
Oh, right.
So, yeah, the flavor's still good, but there's nothing like a peach from, you know, right up the mountain.
Right. And the other thing that I've found out is that in many cases, especially, say, with strawberries or blueberries, they pick them before they're ripe.
Mm-hmm. We see that with tomatoes.
Yeah, and then they gas them.
Yep.
You know, and so that to help ripen them, but the ripening process is where they get most of their nutrition. You know, this is it. You know, the sun gets hot, they start really throwing some good flavonoids and all that up in there to protect it from the sun, which is the nutrition that we want, and then right at the peak you harvest it, and then hopefully it goes right onto the shelf. But if it's in California, it doesn't even have a chance to ripen on the vine or on the tree,
about. As I said before, I'm a flavor junkie. It's got to taste good for me. Yeah, I know it's supposed to be healthy for me, but if it doesn't taste good, I'm not going to eat it.
Absolutely.
And letting those vegetables and fruits kind of grow as they're supposed to, you're getting that flavor.
Yep.
And, added benefit, it's healthy and it's good for you, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it just makes so much more sense to kind of keep it local. Buy from your local farmer, buy from your local farmer's market. You
Absolutely.
Know, ask them to source locally as well.
I
have to be sympathetic, though. It's more expensive.
It is. It is.
You know?
We'll talk about that on the next segment. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, To Your Health, Resistance Radio. Back after these messages. We're back talking with B. Arndt from Speedy B's Energy Bars. And I was just going to, let's see, what does it say? It says, keep the pace, love the taste. And boy, I love the taste. I got to tell you, folks, I've had the chocolate peanut butter and the maple walnut, getting ready to get into this apple cinnamon.
You're going to be pretty full when it's all done.
I'm just taking, you know, of course, I'm just sampling, but it's pretty nice. Pure food, pure energy. That's Speedy B's Energy Bars. And you can find them at various locations here in Charlottesville. Check out their website. Got a lot of good information on the website as well. And so
that's speedyb.com.
Speedyb.com. Yeah. There you go. I was gonna ask B. We were talking about this a little bit, and for all you folks that are really intent on getting local food, locally produced food, as far as I'm concerned, unless I personally know the farmer, and in many cases visited the farm, how do I know that that person at the city market vending, you know, say, ready-to-eat food, how do I know they didn't go to Sam's or, you know, Sysco or whatever and get their meat or the food that they're vending? How do I know that it's been sourced locally?
Yeah, I don't think we do.
Yeah.
It's the honesty of the broker.
It is.
And, you know, I can tell you I source as many things as I can locally, but you're not going to know that unless you come to my kitchen and look at my labels and my product, you know? So I've heard of some places advertising that they source locally, or that maybe they did advertise, they did source locally initially, but then are no longer because as we were talking about before, the cost is really high.
Yeah,
and you were talking about your barbecue sandwiches for $12. Yeah, we have really high overheads because we don't do the high amounts, the economy of scale that a Clif Bar, for instance, can do. They can purchase pallets and pallets and pallets. And so that helps lower the cost, which we can't do. So I'm sympathetic to the problems, but there's that balance about, you know, we need to help. If we can help each other, I think we can help lower those prices, those costs, so then we all benefit. But it's not going to happen overnight.
No, it's not.
That's the problem. How do we keep people honest? I don't know. How do we keep proprietors honest? I don't know. I mean, and we don't want to add another level, right, in thinking about organic and the certification that's required of that. While when we started, actually, everything was organic. All of our ingredients were organic. We could not maintain it. The cost was too high. And then I said, oh, okay, well, maybe I can get that organic stamp on it. That'll be worthwhile. The cost was, I mean, for a company my size, which is, you know, it's me and my husband and some bakers, was prohibitive. We couldn't afford it. Not only to have someone come in, but then maintain it and then ensure that they keep coming back, and you pay them thousands of dollars to do this. Small companies can't do that. So that's this manufacturing kind of regulation, which I think, you know, to some degree is good to ensure that quality. But at the other side, it's, you know, it's hard for small businesses. It's a conundrum. It's a real knot, and I don't have an answer for it, but it's something that we, I think, should talk about or at least acknowledge.
You know, one thing that just flashed through my mind, you know, we do talk about community-based agriculture here at To Your Health all the time. And so, and part of that is donating time and or money to these various initiatives like City Schoolyard Gardens or Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, and then UVA has a sustainability initiative going on as well. And I thought, I said, you know, if say a company like yourself, small company, could say put a couple 3 hours or whatever into one of these gardens that happen to produce some of the products that you used or some of the ingredients you used, then possibly that could go into lowering your overhead, and then you would have organically grown material. It wouldn't be certified, but you would know that there was no pesticides or herbicides thrown onto those ingredients. Just a thought. I think that if we really get this ball rolling, it's going to be solely, you know, sustainable because the community will be involved in producing and then also eating that exact same food and keeping money in the, you know, and it's just going to be a people say vicious circle. This would not be a vicious circle. This would be a positive cycle. Thank you. That's really good. But yeah, and so that can be the future.
Right.
And of course that takes time, and it takes people like yourself and your husband and other producers that we've had on this show and in the local area, the local farmers, and of course the consumers to demand it. Because that's the key there.
I completely agree. I think that's really the key, is that we have to demand high quality. We have to demand local, and put our money where our mouths are.
That's
you know?
It. That's exactly right. That is exactly right. Wow.
And it, you know, I have a newborn at home, so I get it. It's not easy, but I think committing to local, committing to organic isn't just, you know what? It's good for the local economy and local farmers, but it's good for your health.
Absolutely.
And if you want, you know, we're supposed to work out or exercise 2.5 hours every week, and we're supposed to eat healthy. But I think one of the things that doesn't get mentioned as much is that where you're getting your food from or what types of food you're getting, lack of pesticides, for instance, also helps your health because your body, it's natural, it's processed, it's not processed, and your body can process it properly, and you're not putting all these additives in. So if you want to make a good investment in your health, food should be that.
And when you do, even if it costs more, and I've said this again and again, and that is that you will find, folks, that your co-pays will decrease, and your obviously your prescription drug prices will be non-existent. And in many cases, obviously, there are some maladies that require medication, and regardless of your food, but so many maladies can be cured by eating properly, because your body does have the ability to heal itself. I've mentioned before Terry Walls. She's a doctor, an MD. Mm-hmm. And she, are you familiar with her at all?
I mean, I know the name.
And she had secondary progressive late stage MS.
Oy.
She had two canes, zero gravity chair. She was still practicing, and so she'd from office to, you know, from room to room with the two canes and all that. And she was at the Cleveland Clinic, you know, cutting edge technology on this, and nothing was helping. Finally, she took a bunch of supplements, and it only slowed the progression slightly. So then, being a scientist, she went back to the food where the supplements were taken so she could get the whole matrix of that. Of the food, and 18 months later, symptom-free, and she's been symptom-free for 8-9 years, and this is the kind of MS that does not remiss. It does not go into remission, and so she's proof. Now, real, you know, one person, that's anecdotal, but it works. It really works. Food is medicine.
Well, you're going to pay for it one way or the other.
You are, exactly.
So either you eat well and be happy when you do it, or you go sit in doctor's offices and take medicines and pay for it. I mean, we are going to pay for it.
And I always said, you know, pay the vendor, your local producer now or your doctor later.
Exactly.
It's up to you.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. And might as well do it now because you'll enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. When you get older, you'll be happy and healthy.
Well, and you get to eat good food.
And eat good food and meet the farmers and meet the producers. And it just... oh, it just feels so much better, and it kind of goes back to what I was saying with the biodynamics. It's a spiritual uplift. Your spiritual health is better, and also, of course, if you can lower the diabetes and type 2 obesity, oh my goodness!
Mm-hmm.
And then that, of course, that keeps going. It's that positive cycle, like you said, of eating healthy and just being a beneficiary of. Really, you know, really good food and good folks doing it. It's amazing. We are in a great town for that.
Oh, incredible town. Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible town. And I wish we would see more of it. I mean, maybe I'm a little selfish, but, you know, I'd really love to see, rather than kind of going to certain restaurants saying, oh, this one's local or this one's sourced local, that everybody would source local to their ability, or at least, you know.
Well, in season.
And in season. Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's actually really key, you know.
It is.
That I think we don't think, and frankly, I didn't think about until I got into the business, about, okay, wait a minute, why am I eating blueberries in January, you know?
Yeah.
Where is it coming from? Why? Exactly. I'm on a blueberry kick right now. But I think those are the things that we need to think about and just take stock in, you know.
Oh, yeah, it was local. It was local. I got it at my local market. Sorry. I actually had a guy was telling me he was selling barbecue, and I said, is it local, you know, local pastured pork? And he said, well, I don't know about the pasture part, but it's local. I said, really? What farm did it come from? He said, no, it was Cisco Foods. And they drove up. Their office is in Harrisonburg. That's local, right? I said, okay. Next.
Yeah, you know? That's not exactly. Yeah, that's not really local.
No, not really. Not really. It was interesting to see that. That line of thinking, however, you know, somebody thought local was because it was from their local.
I don't think that's uncommon.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, shame on us local purveyors who don't do a better job of educating people about why that's not local.
Yeah.
You know, why we need to source our honey from.
Well, that's what we're for.
Yeah.
Well, we're on To Your Health.
That's
you,
right.
We provide a voice, a conduit, if you will, for the voices, the many voices here in Charlottesville that believe that the local food movement should proliferate and just really, really benefit the community members, you know? So that's what we do here. You know, we are that voice, hopefully. So, but I'll tell you that, we're talking with B. Arndt here on To Your Health at 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, or as we like to say, we're in this time's resistance radio. So, and Speedy B's Energy Bars, keep the pace, love the taste. Pure food, pure energy. Speedy B's. Was that good?
That was really good.
A good plug?
Yeah, we can cut that and throw it on the website.
There we go. Yeah, the website, speedybees.com.
That's right.
There you go. Yeah. And so we're kind of drawing here to a close. If you got any closing thoughts at all?
Closing thoughts, other than eat healthy, eat local.
Yeah, yeah.
Eat my bars. No,
definitely.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. And, I think we really, as a community, really need to be honest with ourselves and say, yeah, we have to commit to supporting local and it's going to come out of the wallet. You know, I think that's really not just the wallet, but as you were talking about, you know, committing to, if we're going to volunteer with local groups, that we just need to commit to it, make the time for it, you know?
And then we talked about earlier, if a family commits the time, then you go down there and you're working together in a garden and you're meeting other folks and they're playing with the other kids in there. And the next thing you know, it's total quality time with the family. And
tired kids at the end of that.
Well, yeah. Hey, yes, yes, yes. Oh, real quick, before I get to my two-minute drill in a couple of minutes, I wanted to mention one thing that you mentioned, B, about lactating moms.
Oh!
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah, so I'm as I've already mentioned a number of times, I have a five-month-old at home, and one of the things that we noticed, or personally I noticed with my bars, is that they have actually helped me with lactation, mm-hmm. particularly because oats and flax are two things that help with producing it. So the maple walnut in particular, it was a funny little side, but again, it goes back to the bottom line, which is that eating healthy, eating local, eating natural foods, it's what your body was meant to do, and it's going to allow you to feel better and do whatever it is you need to do. If it's working out, or if it's lactating, it was a funny little side. So
yeah, no, that I find that very interesting. Hopefully, that's a bit of information to you gals out there that are in that position right now. That wonderful, wonderful position of having a youngster and bringing them up. It's it's more rewarding than not. Overall, there are some times.
There are challenges.
Are you kidding me?
There are, but she's worth it. So.
Yeah, of course, they all are. You know, that's I've got a son and Woody in Virginia Beach. Hopefully, he's listening.
Should be.
Yeah, darn right. Yeah. Actually, he's working like crazy now. He's in a job where he gets lots of overtime, so he's loving it. You know.
Good.
So anyway, so that brings us to my two-minute drill. And that's basically. So, organic, sustainable, natural. What's a consumer to do? I am appalled when I read about some marketing scheme using one or more of these buzzwords to sell phony food to an unsuspecting public who think they're getting a quality product. More and more shelves are being lined with products bearing these monikers, and if they're produced without chemical fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides, or GMO, and labeled as such, they're probably okay. And I applaud the consumers for demanding and the market for responding, but my warning to you is don't believe everything you read about the fuel that you put in your body, because it could mean the difference between you being healthy or sick. That's why we at To Your Health are so adamant about the importance of buying most of your food from community-supported agricultural operations, including the local farmers and producers like Speedy Bees. Just make sure that when you buy products from the outside area, that the retailer is knowledgeable and thorough in their research. We hope in the future, and with your support, City Schoolyard Gardens, Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, and UVA Initiatives will also be able to provide a year-round supply of real food. Greenhouse operations like Planet Earth Diversified for year-round local produce, and farms like Free Union Grass Farms, Wolf Creek Farms, and others providing year-round meats and eggs are true assets to our community. We as members have a unique opportunity to benefit from these and other farmers and retailers who share the common goal of reducing obesity, type 2 diabetes, and health care costs by supporting them. You will be the ultimate winners in this fight to take control of our food system. That's food justice, folks. I want to thank B. Arndt of Speedy Bee's Energy Bars. Thanks, B.
Thank you so much. It was
great fun.
You're
welcome. And remember, eating real food is the key to your health. We're out.
You've been listening to Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Be listening again next Saturday at 11 for To Your Health. The show is produced by Ben Chambers, production assistance from Mike Friend.